Missing this?
I remember Ollie texted me Solskjaer. One or two people would get hold of my number, unfortunately, and he would text me.
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
Football is back. Like the rest of us returning to work, the Premier League is also back. Keep up to date with the latest scores on the OTB Sports app. Live updates and analysis of this summer's Premier League action. The OTB Sports app. Live score updates straight to your phone. The OTB Podcast Network.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
I'm prepared to do anything I can
well,
to
do it then.
Country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Now you're welcome along to the football show. Latest from Spurs against Everton, 1-0. Spurs at half-time, second half just about to get underway. An own goal in that game has Spurs 1-0 up. Moise Keane with the own goal for Everton after 24 minutes. That would be, though, a much-needed win for Jose and Spurs. They are currently eighth in the table, so we'll keep an eye on that game. Later on, before we get to Pat Nevin, we will be talking to Damien Delaney. He was on commentary for us yesterday, Premier League commentary, back here on a Sunday afternoon. We brought you the Newcastle game, and we also brought you Liverpool's win over Aston Villa.
Yeah, 25 yards out, Henderson, little step over, lays it off to his left-hand side to Robertson. Robertson to the back post to Salah, chest it down. Salah to Curtis Jones, and it's 2-0. Curtis Jones secures all 3 points for Liverpool. It's going to be a 24th straight Anfield victory in the Premier League. And Jones, the future, with his new contract in his back pocket, celebrates it with a lovely volleyed finish. Final minute. And the champions lead Aston Villa by 2-0.
Yeah, Damien Delaney alongside Nathan for that game. We'll hear their chat later on, what they made of it. In the meantime, Pat Nevin, good evening.
Good evening to you. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. So what games caught your eye over the weekend?
Well, first of all, you mentioned the Newcastle game. I was at the Newcastle game against West Ham. I've managed to see West Ham twice in the space of a week. And they're all right. They're not great. They're still right.
Wow.
They work hard. They've got one or two players of some capabilities, but you just keep on thinking. I've felt this maybe for 4 years, maybe 5 years now. You know, there's enough good players there, and you think you should be a good team, and they're no more than an average side, and they always seem to be struggling. I don't know what you do to get that group of players together, because you look at the likes of Lanzini and Yarmolenko's brilliant, but is he brilliant for 90 minutes in games? Well, not when he's not starting, but generally he isn't anyway. And they've got too many players like that. And unless they change that, unless they completely root and branch change it, they're always going to be a team that I kind of think should be much better than they are. And they're never going to get that much better. So they're okay. They kind of even defensively, they were a little bit better, even though they lost those two stupid goals, just lacking concentration. But I just felt a wee bit sorry for David Moyes, because I'm looking at it now and I'm thinking, I don't know what you can do about that, really. And that's a shame, because they may get away with relegation this year, you know, in other years, but eventually it's going to catch up with them unless there's a root and branch change there.
That's interesting, because the sense that they should be better when you look at the squad is one that a lot of people have. And then the obvious thing to do is look at the manager in that case. And it's something West Ham have done in the past, even with David Moyes.
Yeah, and it's managers a time and again to look at. And after a while, you think, even though they've changed the personnel as they've gone along quite a bit, you just look at it and you think, eventually, you know, there's a whole group within that there that's not quite right. And even though they're looking at the top players, you know, that really good players, they're quite capable, you think, of being the top standard. But in actual fact, are they going to push on, and are they going to be, you know, players that are going to make them a team that's top quartile of the league? I don't know. I think if they get one or two players that are clearly big enough, they'll end up just going somewhere else. And I kind of do feel a wee bit sorry for them. I really do. I'm not talking to the manager, I'm not talking to the players, I'm talking about the fans, because it's so frustrating for them, because, you know, the big new stadium, all that sort of stuff. And they waited a long time for it. And to be honest, I don't think it's any closer now than it was 4, 5, 6 years ago.
Given that you were at the game, there is the jilted at the altar that we are, I still have a residual interest in Declan Rice. How's he looking?
Well, he's probably the one I was talking about that probably will get the move.
Yeah, it seems Chelsea are definitely sniffing around him.
Yeah, the odd thing is his shape looks a wee bit different. He looks a bit bulkier at the moment, just when you see him in the flesh, as it were. And at the start of the game, actually, I wasn't as impressed. He was a bit anonymous at the start of the game. But as the game wore on, he just got... he grew more and more into it. And then I would say it was a period in the second half where he completely controlled the game. Because he wasn't controlling, he was just destroying before that. And he was doing a good job, because there's important players in the Newcastle side. You look at the likes of Almiron, you know, and Saint-Maximin. The first half, they were looking dangerous, particularly Saint-Maximin. But the second half, Rice seemed to see what the problems were, and he got there and killed the space very, very well. And if they do go down, then he won't spend any time in that division. He'll go up and he'll stay up and he'll move on. I don't know where it is. You say Chelsea are sniffing around. I think they probably are, but they ain't short of midfield players. I just have a suspicion that Manchester United will come in at the last minute and try and grab him. And I think he'd be a good addition to Manchester United's team.
And is that Rice's level? Yeah, top 14.
There's a lot. I think there's a lot more players than people give credit for, that if you stick them in a top four, top six team, they actually look okay because they're surrounded by players that are very, very technically capable. You know, the ones that they won't manage because they'll be out of their depth, and, you know, and they'll be surrounded by far better players. But I don't think he's surrounded by far better players if he goes to Manchester United. I think if you look around at even the fullbacks and things like that, you think, no, he's not, you know, going to be outclassed there. Or, I mean, even the likes of Alec McTominay, he's a good player, but is he miles behind McTominay? Well, no, of course not. He's not. McTominay's a player that plays regularly. Whether he can be as good as, obviously, the two big names in the midfield, who knows? But I don't think he's necessarily playing that position. In fact, he's not playing that position. He's a cover for them too. So it just sometimes I think looks right, and I think Rice to Manchester United, if West Ham go down, it just looks right.
Later on, we'll be hearing Damien Delaney chatting about the Liverpool game. I don't know if you saw much of that. There is an aspect of it I wanted to get your thoughts on. It relates to Jack Grealish, another player who it feels a move may be imminent for, to a Manchester United or somewhere else. So with nine games to go, he's broken the Premier League record for most fouls against. And generally, this is spoken of as a compliment to the player, you know, like an Eden Hazard type. We'll top this list, or Ronaldo, and the implication is, well, they're causing havoc and defenders can't handle them, so they have to foul them, or maybe they're being targeted because they're the best player on the pitch. So Graeme Souness was on Sky Sports in advance of the game, I think. I don't think it was during the game that he made this point, but it was an interesting observation. I want to get your thoughts on it on the far side. So here's Souness on this point that Grealish now the most fouled player in the league and has broken the record as the most fouled player in the league. Have a listen.
There's no doubt to me as he has genuine quality. It's just how you think he's ready to go to a bigger team, and in a bigger team he wouldn't have to take so many touches, you know, because people would be showing for a ball and making better movement for him. I'm not so sure. I think, what can I say? We won't know until or if that should happen. He has got qualities. But I'm trying to think how, see, at the top teams today, do Liverpool carry any passengers when they don't have the ball? No. So, you know, we're Man City, definitely not. No one has anyone who is standing with their hands on their hips when you lose the ball. Everyone has to get the sleeves rolled up and press, or be the second one to press or the third one to press. That's something, it's not in his game right now.
Is that fair, Emil? Is he standing with his hands on his hips?
I don't think so myself, but you know, he's in a team that is not necessarily on the front foot like your top teams, where you give the ball away and then you suddenly go and pounce on people like that. When Liverpool give the ball away, within three passes, they try and get it back straight away. Whereas Villa, they will drop back into a certain and just keep a certain shape and be very solid. So I'm guessing it's just the tactics that were maybe that they're playing at.
Are you related to him? I'm not denying he has talent, but for me, there's a big question mark.
So I'm not sure they're all exactly the specific quotes, that clip, but he also went on to, I mean, the point he was making specifically on the most fouled point was that he's not seeing the picture early enough. He said, when I was playing, I would not want to be the most fouled player in the Premier League. That means I'm holding onto the ball for too long. That means I'm not seeing the picture early enough. I am taking extra touches, rather, when I don't need to. It means you're not seeing the picture quick enough. There's no doubt he's got ability, but I'm yet to be convinced. I know he's got 7 goals this season. And he went on to say things like, when I was being coached at Liverpool, I was told to make the striker's mind up with my body movement, the way I get the ball out of my feet, the way I'm shaping to kick the ball. I think that anyone that gets tackled that much and gets that many fouls isn't seeing the picture quick enough. I always come back to it. Would I like to play against him? I would have loved to play against Grealish. He allows me to get to him. He allows me to get physical with him. I don't want to play against a Paul Scholes or a Xavi or an Iniesta popping off 1-2 touch. I want to play against people like him because I know he's going to allow me to mess him around. Frothing at the mouth at just the thought of throwing Jack Grealish around. So I suspect you're somebody who got fouled in his day. Talk to us about it. It's an interesting observation.
It's interesting, a couple of things, right? First of all, Souness talks about your players that stand with their hands and their hips. And if Grealish is doing that, you know, you ain't going to win anything, you'll probably go down. I remember a player, Georgie Kinkladze, who played for Manchester City. Absolutely wonderful, great player. Get you relegated. And I'm the sort of guy supposed to like that sort of player. Yeah. I'd say the same about De La Feo. No, exactly the same. Brilliant, brilliant player. One of the worst off the ball that I've seen in many, many years. But because he does something special fairly frequently, people let him away with it. But if you play with 10 players most of the time, you'll end up getting relegated, unless you are Eric Cantona or you're Maradona or whatever, or you're Messi. Yeah. You can get away with that. But you need to be unbelievably special in what you add to the team. Right. So with that, I'm with it. I'm with Souness in that one. I absolutely accept it. The getting fouls one is, I think that's a much more important and interesting point. I really liked Graham's line on it. I mean, having been kicked a few times by him myself, I know that he wanted to be able to get close and he would love that opportunity. And that's where statistics don't actually help you that well when they're that bland and that wide. It's not the fouls, it's the type of fouls where they are and the effect that they have, right? So if I get the ball, Hazard was pretty damn guilty at this, and it used to drive me nuts. He'd get the ball, hold it, stop, turn, and look round, and then somebody would melt him, somebody would thump him. And you're thinking, you're on the halfway line, mate. You ain't getting a yellow card for that. You've not caused any danger. But yeah, you've been fouled another couple of times. That doesn't do it you or anyone. It's just going to slow you down. Mm. What you want to be, see if you're fouled, you want to be in the last third, preferably in the penalty area if you possibly can, where you can get a dangerous free kick in. You want to actually be travelling at pace when you're fouled. That's really important, that. Don't get fouled when you're stationary, if you can help it, because there's nothing you can do about that, and it's just a foul. If you're going at pace and you get the same foul, he'll get a yellow. That's just the way it is. It looks that much worse, and as soon as he's got a yellow, he can't do it again, and you're free. So little things like that I took for granted through an entire career of learning how to take hits, where to take hits, how to draw hits in to get fouls or penalties or whatever in specific places. And, you know, I look at some players and I think, well, I don't think you've figured that out yet. And for me, it was kind of second nature. You understood immediately what you had to do. Get into a place where if you're fouled, they're in trouble, not just themselves, but their team's in trouble as well. And maybe that's the point I would. You put statistics up all over the place. Yeah. I want to know what the statistics are for the free kicks that you get in dangerous areas, like 20, 25 yards out, or indeed closer than that.
And without me or pertinently, Graeme Souness been able to give you a breakdown of Grealish's fouls. The implication is clear that he's taken too much out of the ball and he's not giving it quick enough, or he's not seeing the bigger picture. What's your sense of Grealish as a player?
No, I really like him. I love the fact that he's got enough technical ability to go wherever he likes. Now, I have to say, you know, he has grown fabulously. You know, it's taken, you know, in some ways he hasn't grown a lot, but the maturity on the pitch has actually grown a lot from where he was before, because none of it was pre-thought before. And there's a bit of me that likes that as well, but eventually you need to mature into a player who see. Graham Talk calls it the bigger picture. I call it kind of an awareness, a 360 awareness, and a game awareness. It's the same sort of thing. He's seen a bit more of that, but players that have game awareness, you know, he plays great little short balls, but see the ball the way you drag three players towards it and then ping it 25, 35, 40 yards away. You know, you've taken three, four players out of the game without going round them. That's as good as anything in the game. And maybe it doesn't do that quite as often enough for a very, very top player. You know, he's a great player, he's a very good player, whatever. Yeah. But to go to that next step, the question you asked before, is he going to be a top four player? Well, Man City aren't going to buy him. They're not going to touch him, I don't think, because there are too many weaknesses in that game that have to be ironed out, too many decisions that have to be ironed out and changed. For Pep to do that, that's a massive work in progress that he would have to take on.
It's interesting that you certainly, I don't want to say you totally agree with Souness, but that you can see where he's coming from, because the general reception to Souness's comments that I've seen across the day, various people, has been to disagree with him. And Grealish himself tweeted the stats, if we're going again on stats, that only Kevin De Bruyne across this season has created more chances for his teammates. So Grealish is there with 80 chances. That puts him number two of any player in the Premier League, and needless to say, he's not exactly playing for one of the best teams either.
Yeah, I'm not arguing against that. I think he's, as I say, I call him a great player a few moments ago, and he's doing that for a team low down. You asked me a bit specific part of his game.
Yeah.
You know, I break down games. If I'm looking at players, I'm breaking down very specific parts of the game. Now, you ask a bit specific part of the game, I'd be getting fouled. Now, it's a thumb you can improve. It's really, really easy to improve it by consideration and thought and understanding the importance of where you get fouled and how you manipulate that situation. You know, if I get fouled by whatever player, I really do want him to get booked if it's a bad foul. And it's going to be a bad foul if I'm at pace. But if I keep on getting the ball in positions where I'm going to, you know, invite fouls, that's where Hazard did it all the time, invited fouls. Now, you're not going to think I'm saying Hazard's anything less than a brilliant player.
Sure.
I'm just saying there are certain things that if you adapted that, I mean, I don't think Messi invites fouls. I really don't. Because you get the ball to Messi, he's turning and he's moving, and you foul him at your peril. Because within seconds, he's in the box or in a very dangerous area, or he's going at a pace that you will be booked if you touch him in any way at all. So in that one specific area. But it may well be the point that Graham's making is subtly, hey, if you fix that part of the game, you know, you're going to be very, very special.
Yeah.
And I think that's the point he's making.
Yeah, no, fair enough. But you think that the deficiency as it stands would put a Guardiola off? It's that significant?
It would put Guardiola off, but I don't think it would put Manchester United off.
Okay.
Okay. You know, I don't think it would put Arsenal off. So it's that sort of difference. So you're talking about getting up to there when in actual fact you want to go up there.
There, okay.
The scale.
Okay, interesting.
And that's the difference that is.
Mason Greenwood, where is he pitching in at 18 years of age?
I'm sure somebody must have mentioned it, because I was watching the game and watching the way he finished. And you'll remind me of the game. I think it might have been England against Argentina, Michael Owen.
Yeah, quarterfinal.
And he did that break. Yeah, and it bent away, and then he scored from that weird position of his body angle, and it looked so natural, and it looked so young, and it looked so easy, and you just thought, wow, there's very few people that can do that. And it looked like that, didn't it?
A little bit, but you know, even more impressive, like I guess Owen there was effectively dinking it over the keeper. Maybe it was last 16, not quarter final, whereas Greenwood was rifling the thing. And there's footage, and they won't make this mistake twice, but it's emerged after the game, of the Bournemouth goalkeeper for the goal Greenwood scored on his right foot. And he's screaming at the defence, don't let him turn, don't let him turn, as in don't let him turn back onto his left foot. And then, vroom, right foot, blast past him. And it's like, oh, you can do that too.
Yeah. I know. It's nice when there's some players, you know, there is a breakthrough game. I think a lot of people think it's already happened, you know, with Greenwood even before this. I think, you know, how natural a finisher, and it's hard to explain that to people what a natural finisher is. but he's always going to score goals. He's a more natural finisher than Rashford. To take nothing away from Marcus, fabulous player. But you just look at some people and they are, it doesn't make them the best player in the world all the time, but you just think, you, that is what you're built for. You are phenomenal at it. You have that in your I mean, I've been lucky, I've talked to you before about the likes of Aldridge and people that they're just very natural finishers. That's they're kind of number one aim. Now, you ask footballers about football and you think, well, that should be everyone's number one aim. It's not really. lots of people are creating goals, are holding, linking, all that sort of stuff. With him, it's just the goal. It is the goal. Manipulating a situation so that you can get a shot away and you believe in your accuracy and your power and your vision. And also that brilliant, brilliant ability to take that shot half a step earlier than anyone expects. And boy, I wish I would have known how to do that. Over the years, watching the guys that do that, and you think, no, but you need to get your legs straight. You need to get your position right. You need to get your body technically right. And it's the most natural thing to do that. And then you watch the guys that don't do that and you think, damn, that's good. You know, and often it's the case where watch him throughout his career, watch the amount of goals he scores through players' legs. It'll be I promise you, it will amaze you. And you know what I'm talking about. We've all got this player I used to play with, Coisty. He'd go wide to somebody and take it that half a yard early, and the player's legs are in a position where they're running. And it just goes through. And every goalkeeper will tell you, if it goes through a defender's legs, it's a goal. Covering that at all. And Greenwood, because he takes that half a step early shot, it's going to happen all the time.
Yeah. It's just goals out of nothing at 18, stepping up to senior level. It's very exciting for everybody at Manchester United. So, I mean, they banged in another five goals. 2011 is the last time they did that at home. I mean, the opposition they're beating can be thrown at them, but they just have not clicked like this. Since I don't know when, never under any manager post Ferguson, they've never made such easy work of Premier League opposition.
Yeah, and we talk about United a lot, and you know my feelings about Pogba. You know he could be the catalyst of it all, but you look up front and the fact that now Rashford actually looks like, you know, a very mature striker, stroke wide attacker. I think that they're actually using them now in the right positions more often than not, which I'm really happy about, allowing them to kind of, you know, go a little bit wider, drift into areas where he's hard to mark, use his pace where he knows it's dangerous. Finally getting the best out of Martial, which I just think he's technically a brilliant player, Martial. So you're getting the best out of him as well. So all the other little bits are beginning to be, you know, put together like a jigsaw. Now, if you ask anybody down at Chelsea, you know, who they fear. Well, it's United by miles. You know, that's what... And it wouldn't have been that maybe even 6 months ago. It really wouldn't have been. No, but it is now. They're the team, you look at it now, and they have got power, they have got physique, they have got technical ability, they have got a manager who's saying to them, be Man United. Because he is Man United, so be Man United. And they are being Man United, which is great to see.
Harry Maguire, the nutmeg for the goal, he looked very... lacking in mobility. And the Spurs game, when Roy Keane wanted to throw digs in the dressing room at half time, Maguire looked flat footed there again. The jury's sort of out on him. There's definite deficiencies to his game for all the other attributes, and he seems like a great captain and a good fella, but there are times he looks very ordinary.
Do you know, I like him. I love the fact that he can play out from the back. He's in a team that likes to, but is not absolutely dependent on playing for that position. So you maybe don't see as much of that ability as if he'd have chosen City instead of United. So that's, you know, one side of his game you're actually seeing a wee bit less of, and it's a bit unfair in him.
Right.
Pace-wise, there's lots that are quicker than him, so that will be a problem sometimes. I think it's all about partnerships with him. He's got to find the right guy. It's a partnership. And oddly enough, he's not an easy one to find a partner with, because, you know, old school stuff, you know, you get the guy that attacks the ball and, you know, gets his head in there and does all that sort of stuff. And then you get the intelligent one behind him who clears up and knows how to play, etc. But of course, Maguire is this hybrid, isn't he? He can kind of go and attack it. He's a big, strong lad, but he can play a bit as well. And it's kind of like, do you get another one just like him? Or do you get someone who is a direct attacker of the ball? Or do you get an ultra player who's almost a midfielder playing behind him? but that wouldn't look right either, because you do need a little bit of physique in there. So the odd thing is, it's his partner. I don't think the problem's him. I think it's the covering partner. And I've known you long enough to know you're going to say, so who would that be now? And I can't tell you. I really can't tell you. And I was thinking about that the other day, because you always look at centre-back partnerships. And I was at the West Ham game, West Ham-Newcastle game. I'm watching down and Brucey's right in front of his, Moyes is in front of his. And yeah, I can tell you in a millisecond who the correct type of partners were for them for centre-backs. And I look around the league just now, and you know the right ones. You know the ones that have got it right and the ones that are still struggling to get it right. I mean, but I can see almost what's needed in most of the rest of them. I'm not sure I can tell you what's absolutely needed. I'm not convinced it's there at the moment, to be fair.
Interesting.
It might be him, but the other one beside him that's going to make them a very, very special team. There may be some Italian centre-back out there somewhere, and maybe the right guy, but it's not clear.
So, Man City, for a lot of the season, we dealt with a lot of their woes through the Laporte injury. And that seemed like a satisfactory explanation. But this was their ninth loss across the season. You know, nine losses. And Silva's going, Aguero's not getting any younger. And you've got this cast hearing looming over them. You know, and if they have a two-year ban upheld, who knows who goes? Does De Bruyne at 29 sit around for 2 years? Anyway, the point I wanted to get your thoughts on is Laporte's injury no longer feels like a satisfactory explanation for nine losses across the season. Even the fact that this game doesn't count for much doesn't feel satisfactory. There's something not right there, given the quality of player they have. There's a chink or a psychological weakness or a letting up of some kind. How do you sum up Man City with that squad and that manager losing nine games in this Premier League season?
You'd almost have to go into every one of them, you know, individually and look at it. I mean, some of them have been incredibly unlucky. I mean, the vast majority of them, when they've lost them, they've had most of the possession. We do know that, you know, it's a cliche, but defensively they aren't as strong as, you know, a number of other teams. But then that's going to happen when you're an offensive-minded team. I think when you look back at it, the amount of teams that tell you over the history, trying to go and win a championship once, then twice, then three times, it gets exponentially harder, because you need to keep that level of commitment and that level of desire all the way through a season. It's really hard. It's unbelievably hard. I think then when you stick, most of it comes down to De Bruyne for me. They are a better team, a far, far better team, and he's playing, and he's playing well, which is when he's playing, basically, because he always plays well, just about. And some games they bring him on and it's half an hour, but it's not been quite enough. And it's almost as if the rest of the team have to gear up to make sure they're at that pace, and then he can change it. There are slight problems there, but I'm not writing them off. We've said to you before, this still could be, and I wouldn't be surprised if this is the best season in Manchester City's history, entire history, because they could win the Champions League and they could win both cups, which would be astonishing, absolutely astonishing. So, would I bet against them doing that? No, I wouldn't. So, there's the other thing, which is an absolute stick on. They'll be looking ahead to all the games just now, and they are now prioritising. Without a doubt, they're prioritising. The next cup game is the biggest game that they have to sort themselves out. They have to get through to the final of the FA Cup. And almost the games between now and then are warm-up games to that. I don't think they're anything more than that. It's just warm-up games to that game. Everyone will be tried, but trust me, that FA Cup game, that's the one you'll see their first team. That's the one you'll see everyone rested for. That's how everyone's getting developed for. That's the one they're trying to get Aguero back for. That's what it's all about. And if you take that in hand, no, it's not been a fantastic season for them at all. And they have looked insipid. I've been there when they have been unbelievable this season, just like playing against teams to make them look like small children.
Yes.
And I've seen them when it's just looked pathetic, a bit kind of limp and, insipid would be the best word. And it's just, you don't know when it's going to come. But I would be surprised if in these cup competitions, between now and the end of the season if you don't get the A game for Manchester City in every one of those games. And I'm not going to eat humble pie and say, oh, they're terrible, they've gone when they have their best ever season.
No, fair point. Any final thought from the weekend you often have one you want to throw at us in the last 90 seconds?
No, I'm just, funnily enough, it's a weird thing because I was writing a thing for Chelsea's website, and I realised, oh God, I've got another 1,000 words to write, and I'm realising I'm getting tired. It's the games every other day, and I'm only writing about it or talking about it. See, right now, I'm beginning to see some players utterly wilting, completely. 60 minutes in, you're seeing them. That they're almost wanting to get taken off. And I hadn't, you know, for the first few games, it was played at slow tempo. But now I'm beginning to see it. And it's, I don't know, I want these games to go on. And it's just going to help the bigger teams that much more now. Because the teams that have got more limited squads, I'm actually feeling really sorry for them now. Because it's Burnley, the first it became obvious where they got really, really tight. And it's going to happen to quite a lot more now. Whereas you look at the Cities, the Uniteds, the Chelseas and all the rest of it, they've got plenty to go and sort of get out off the bench, and they can bring on five subs if they want as well. And it's actually now feeling a wee bit grotesquely unfair on those teams, because those small squads is probably the thing that's going to kill them in the end.
Pat, brilliant as ever. Thanks a million.
Pleasure. See you soon. Talk next week.
Pat and Evan there. Before we go to an ad break, let's check in on Spurs Everton with Guy Swindles.
Spurs 1, Everton 0. Well, there's been no second half pickup really in this match so far. Continues to look more like a training game than anything else. Spurs probably have a little more urgency than Everton at the moment. Certainly they've had the one half chance of this second half when Son was put through and forced a smart save from Pickford from an acute angle. But still Michael Keane's own goal that separates the sides midway through the first half. Spurs 1, Everton 0.
About 70 minutes gone in that game. Short ad break, Damien Delaney next.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as spending a 9-month loan spell at Preston North End.
Welcome back. 75 minutes on the clock. It is still Spurs 1, Everton 0. A Michael Keane own goal. Apologies, I think I said Moise Keane earlier on. I saw the M Keane and presumed wrongly. So Michael Keane own goal has Spurs 1-0 up at home to Everton. 75 minutes on the clock. As mentioned, at 9 o'clock we had Damien Delaney and Nathan calling the Liverpool game yesterday. Live Premier League commentary coming your way every Sunday here in Off the Ball. Liverpool with a 2-0 win over Aston Villa, and Damien gave Nathan his thoughts afterwards.
So a 2-0 win for Liverpool against Aston Villa. Sluggish enough again from the champions, but they got the job done in the second half with goals from Sadio Mane and Curtis Jones. Damien Delaney was alongside me. You reading anything into any of these Liverpool performances between now and the end of the season?
Not the performances. I think I'm reading a little bit into team selection today. As I said, possibly he's looking at his midfield, shaking that up a little bit, giving Keita extended minutes, giving him another chance. I know he's not set the world alight, but he's still finding his feet a little bit. Gave Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know, and I do think if Liverpool are going to evolve and move forward, it's that midfield area, and maybe he just wants to have a look at that makeup, because I did like the look of it on paper. It looked quite good. Fabinho sitting, lots of legs, lots of energy, but Keita just fails to impose himself on the game. Oxlade-Chamberlain actually reasonably well today. You know, he got about, put some nice crosses in. He's effective. Whether he's going to give you 50 games a season the way the other lads will, I'm not sure. So maybe you just want to have a look at that midfield trio, see how it did. But we found out after an hour that he wasn't best pleased with it, and he got him off quick enough and got the tried and trusted on.
Well, how frustrated is he going to be with that then? Because he made three changes from the Manchester City team, and an hour in, he needs to bring on the big boys. He needs to bring on Henderson, Wijnaldum and Firmino, that he gave players a chance and they didn't take it.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's two ways of looking at it. He gave him a chance because he wanted to look to the future as well. Origi starting too. So he gave him a chance, so they want to look to the future. But also, he gave him a chance to reward them for their patience all season. Guys that wouldn't necessarily have played every week, they're not guaranteed starters. They're still putting in the same hours as everyone else is, although they're not playing on a Saturday, but they train on a Sunday the day after. And I know that a lot of teams will, you know, the 11 that don't play on a Saturday, they'll train on a Sunday morning while the others are doing a recovery, and they'll do the same numbers in a session in terms of distance covered that the lads did on a Saturday. So they are working equally as hard as everyone. And you've got to reward these guys. You've got to give them some sort of a carrot, some sort of a kind of a pat on the head to say, listen. So there's an element of that, and there's also an element of like, right, proved to me that I was wrong to not play you guys from the start of the season. But today he just kind of went, well, I think it was right to keep sticking with Henderson and Wijnaldum. But, you know, moving forward, he, you know, those three can't last forever. Henderson is, I think, I won't say on the wane a little bit, but, you know, I think he's going to have to limit his numbers a little bit more than what he has done this year, because I know he has dragged them quite a few times. But where do they go from here? And I know the club will certainly be thinking about that.
Yeah, and look, Liverpool are 23 points clear now. They've won the league with 7 games to go, so they're in a very unusual situation in that people are going to be watching these games between now and the end of the season and reading a whole lot into them and judging players. And we've had 3 guys come in today, not make an impression. Minamino started a couple of weeks ago, was taken off at half time. The question of Liverpool has been about depth, that their first 11 we know is arguably the best 11 in Europe when they're playing at their peak. But can they keep going into what will be a third, fourth season of competing at the very highest level without depth and without the players who come in and are asked to come in consistently make and putting pressure on the 11, which is the other thing,
because absolutely.
It feels as
absolutely.
Though that those players on the outside are the backup. You never look at any of them and think, geez, he's really putting Wijnaldum under pressure for a starting 11.
I agree with you, and you're asking these questions, and I think Jurgen Klopp will be asking these questions, but he'll already have an idea or an inkling of like the route he wants to go. I've said numerous times before, he's 4 transfer windows ahead of where he wants to be. He'll have a dossier this thick on his desk of where he wants Liverpool to be in 2 years, the brand of football they want to play, the type of player they want to play, the youth they want to bring through, and exactly the path that they're on. He's not a manager that's won the league and he's going to go and have a good time for a month and then come back in the summer and go, right, where are we going from here, lads? I guarantee you he'll have teams of analysts behind the season scouring Europe, you know, looking for players to come in, players that can fit the direction he may want to go in.
What if they don't, though? Because he has said that with the financial crisis, no, not in terms of the scouts scouring Europe, but what if nobody comes in? Do you think Liverpool can contest for Premier League and Champions League again next season if they don't have reinforcements?
If Liverpool don't get anyone else in, I can't imagine anyone else, you know. So if this pandemic has affected football and everything gets scaled back, then everything getting scaled back, you know, Man City are going to struggle and it's going to be the status quo. You know, Manchester United might be a little bit stronger because they've blooded so many youth players that are kind of on an upward curve, whereas Liverpool are potentially, if they don't reinvest or reinvigorate that squad, Man City have already gone over the crest and on the way down, they need to come again. So he does need to invest. He will invest. They have money. Their net spend is something like 100 million. So there will be cash available to him. But he's not just going to spend it willy-nilly. He's not just going to get in players for the sake of it. He will have a clear plan, a clear path wherever he wants to go.
Today was their 24th straight victory at Anfield in the Premier League. They've won every game at Anfield this season. I think they're now in 57 games unbeaten at Anfield. You were part of the last team to win there with Crystal Palace over 3 years ago. In fact, you were part of a couple of Crystal Palace teams that won at Anfield, the games that we covered at the time on Off the Ball. And they're games that always stand out of the atmosphere around the Liverpool supporters towards the Liverpool players and the lack of trust they had, that even when they went in front like they did, I think Philip Coutinho scored that day, that they never fully trusted the team would hold on. There were so many defensive mistakes. Can you talk a bit about how they've turned it into such a fortress? All right, the fans aren't there at the moment, but what he has done over the last 3 years, from a ground you probably went to thinking, you know what, we can unsettle these guys, to a ground where they're just unflappable.
Well, that comes from 30 years of, I won't say misery, because they did have a lot of success in the Champions League, but they had a long period in that 30 years where there were some short periods where they were very, very good, but they had long periods where they were continuously disappointed. So fans are going to a ground and they've have that feeling of being disappointed. They bring that with them. What this guy has done, Klopp, has come in and he's just galvanised the whole thing. You know, he really has, you know, his big, powerful personality, big, strong guy. He's come in and said, this is Liverpool, we don't leave early. You know, you support your team right to the dying minute. But then he's obviously provided evidence that is possible. I mean, one of the jokes that was going around about Klopp was the day he made against West Brom, he made all the players do that saluting the crowd thing.
For a 2-2 draw.
And then that was a stick that he was beaten with pretty regularly over the last number of years. But it was a message to the fans that, like, you know, we're not perfect, but we try and we're doing our damnedest to get this team back to where it is. And the fans kind of would buy into that and they'd go, we drew 2-2. And on the face of it, 2-2 at West Brom, well, what are you doing over here? Get in there and go training. But it was almost a case of, listen, we stuck at this game and we have our flaws, but I tell you what, we give everything that we have and we're on the path to going somewhere. So that's what he's done. You know, he's got the fans back on side. He's got them believing again. He's, you know, when we first got the job, there was pictures of him sitting in Liverpool pubs having pints or eating fish and chips or a cafe, I think it was, having a fry up or something like that. And a lot of people might dismiss that as kind of PR for Liverpool and stuff like that. But I think he seems like a genuine kind of fella. You know, he would go walk into a bar, order a pint of John Smith's and sit down with you, you know.
Do managers go into the opposition dressing room after games at Premier League level?
I've had it, yeah.
Did you, the last time around when you beat Liverpool 2-1, did he arrive in?
No, he caught us coming up the steps, really, because after, it was his first defeat, and we'd won, and obviously we went over to our fans, and we spent 5 minutes there, you know, applauding our fans. So by the time we got back in, Liverpool were in their changing room, and as we were coming up those old steps underneath the Anfield sign, I was giving it the old woo, you know what I mean, you know, and I genuinely wasn't doing it to wind up Liverpool. I wasn't, but he took exception to that.
Oh really?
Yeah, and you know when you come up the steps, you know the home change room is there and the away change room is here, so we came up the steps and just as we were turning right, I tell you, the door flung open at a pace, and your man, and he's a big man, he's 6'4", I'd say, you know, and he came out like, and he had the scowl on him and the glasses were on and he just stared and I went, ooh. But he took exception to that,
right?
That we were disrespecting unintentionally, that maybe we were disrespecting, well, I was anyway, you know, but I didn't care. I just kind of looked at him and went, quickly got a change. But you know,
you weren't going to square up to him,
right?
What's the problem?
But you could tell that, like, you know, I understood there now, because when he came up to change room, I thought, oh shit, maybe I have slightly disrespect, and I didn't want, that wasn't my intention at all.
Yeah.
You know, and I, you know, we were just chuffed that we won 2-1 at Anfield. How many people can say they've won a game at Anfield? Sure. It's a big thing. But I quickly quietened down and almost kind of noddily went, I didn't mean any disrespect, you know, and quickly got in my changing room.
So you think of your attitude when you used to go to Anfield, and you look at, say, 10 days ago, Crystal Palace, who had been in brilliant form, come to Anfield, literally don't touch the ball in the Liverpool penalty area for the entire game. Aston Villa come to Anfield today, little or no ambition but to come away somehow with a 0-0 draw. Psychologically, do you think opponents' attitude towards going to Anfield has changed dramatically over the last 3 years?
Absolutely. You look at the way Liverpool start games of football. I remember reading a stat, I can't remember the exact stat, but I mean, they had a large chunk of their games won within the first 11, 12 minutes. You know, that if Liverpool got in front, they just come up the traps quickly and they just blow you away. Like Manchester United do under Alex Ferguson, it was the same thing. They would just come up the traps and just like say, you're not getting settled here. This is our house. A bit like me walking up the steps that time. This is my house. You don't come into my house and disrespect me. You beat me, but you don't disrespect me. And I think he has that attitude. And when a manager has that, I've always said I'm a big believer that teams take on the personality of their managers. And he felt that if someone was shown a little bit of disrespect in our house, I'm not standing for that. I'm going to swing that door open. I'm going to stare down whoever's doing it, because this is my house. And I have a lot of respect for that. And that looks like the type of guy that he is.
On Aston Villa then, they're still inside the relegation zone. Do you give them any hope of surviving?
The possibility of Watford could be worse ever so slightly, but it won't be anything that Aston Villa do. You know, Watford have Norwich at home, their next game. Villa are going to Man United. Mm. There could be a nice little swing there where Villa find themselves 3 points in the relegation zone, and then Villa have Crystal Palace at home. And if Villa win that, the best they're going to do is going to go level with Watford, but in it on goal difference as well. So there's 6 games left. That's 4 left after that, best case scenario. So the Villa go to and get beaten at United and Watford. This is where I used to break it down in my head. And Watford beat Norwich, all things being equal, you're 3 points in it with 4 games to go. And even if you beat Palace at home, you need results to go your way. So I would probably say, I'm guessing here, to be honest, I don't know.
But yeah, you do look and wonder where the goals will come from. And they've dried up completely since the restart for Villa. And so much of it comes down to Jack Grealish. And Graeme Souness caused a bit of a stir before the game, where he said he hadn't been fully convinced by Jack Grealish and that he's a player he'd love to play against, a player he could probably get at. If they go down, the expectation would be Grealish will go and will go to one of the top four. Is he at that level?
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's a fantastic player. At the minute, he's the only bright spark. Well, I think when he said Tyrone Mings will go as well, by the way. And I think he'll go quicker than Grealish. I think Grealish will be a haggling over the fee and stuff, but I think someone's going to come in and take Tyrone Mings straight out of Villa team and a good side as well. You know, if I was looking at, sorry to get off topic from your point, but if I was looking at Aston Villa team and I was Jose Mourinho, I would be thinking, I want Tyrone Mings in my side. That's the type of player that I want in my side right now. Go and get me him. I don't care what he costs. And get me him quick so I can build over the course of the season. But to go back to Grealish's point, there'll be a lot of media attention and furore around that, and Villa will play hardball. They'll want to get the maximum price for him. He's definitely a player for the right price, I'd have him in my squad. He's a talented boy. Whether he can go on and play 50 games a season to the level that Gini Wijnaldum can play at, or the level that a Raheem Sterling, I know they're different types of players, but that level where he can chuck out 40, 8, 9, 10 other games a season, remains to be seen. But he's definitely a player someone would look. I think United would look at him almost certainly with the profile that United are going for now. I think he would fit in with them quite nicely.
With guilt like your eyes.